Hello and welcome to the Linux Lads. This is episode 103. As usual, I'm Shane and I'm joined by Amleth, Connor and Mike. Say hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
And today we are joined by a special guest. We're joined by Kieran, who you might recognize from our Telegram chat. Hello, Kieran.
Hello.
So, in a nutshell, Kieran, who are you and why are you here?
I get asked that question a lot every time I enter a room. I'm here to talk to you today about some projects I work on, but to sort of introduce myself, I'm a technical writer and former programmer, and I do work in the open source space for a project called Funkwell, which is an audio publication and music cataloging system powered by ActivityPub. As well as I'm helping with the specking work for a project called the Open Podcast API, which is another attempt to create a podcast syncing service for podcatchers. So a kind of continuation of what Gpod has started.
Okay, I'm sure we're going to have a ton of questions about this. I suppose let's start with Funkwell. How did you get started with that?
So it was a weird one. I was working as an IT support technician at the time, and I was trying to get a job as a systems administrator. And so I thought I needed to go away and learn some new technologies and, you know, bring myself up to speed with that. And one of those was Docker. So I was like, well, the best way to learn this is I'm just going to have to actually, you know, rent a VPS and try running some services on it. First one I tried was Mastodon. That went fine.
Not a lot of people say that.
And I was using Spotify at the time to listen to music, and Spotify removed an album, and I think it was They Might Be Giants' is The Spine. They'd had some sort of licensing dispute or something, and I actually got in touch with John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants and was like, hey, why isn't this on Spotify anymore? And he was just like, I don't know. We don't do the licensing. That's not our job. And so I was like, well, I own a lot of this stuff on CD, so I'd like to have a way to self-host it. And so I was looking for, what can I self-host? People were suggesting on Reddit, like Ampachy and all that sort of thing. And then at the bottom of one of these threads, somebody had said, hey, what about Funkwell? It's AGPL, it's self-hosted, and soon it's going to support ActivityPub. And I was like, oh, that's cool. That other thing I just installed is ActivityPub. Mm. So I tried to install Funkwell. It came with Docker containers, and I was like, fantastic. I tried to install it. I failed. Miserably. So I went into the chat room, started talking to Agat, who was the lead developer at the time, and she basically was like, oh, yeah, the instructions are not good, but she helped me get it installed. I started helping other people, and then eventually sort of said, hey, you know, if we just, like, fix the documentation, we solve a lot of these problems. Do you mind if I have a crack at that? And she was like, sure. So I did, and then I also got into fixing front-end bugs, teaching myself how that sort of side of things worked, and I've been with the project ever since, so it's been about 5 years.
Oh, wow. Hmm. So for people who are not familiar with what Funkwell does, is it a kind of Google Music? They're like, you could upload your entire music library and stream it yourself for free. And is there also a discoverability element to it, like SoundCloud, maybe? From your description, those are immediately the services that popped into my mind.
Yeah, it's a question we get a lot. A lot of people seem to come to the Fediverse and think, this is a set of replacements for the stuff that I have on the clear web, or the, you know, non-federated web. So they think Mastodon is Twitter. They think, you know, PixelFed is Instagram. they do all of that. And it's perfectly reasonable to assume this. But of course, then they're looking for the replacement to Spotify. They see that Funkwell does music and they think exactly what you've just said. No, is the answer. We can't be Spotify because the way that Spotify works is it's not user-generated content. It's licensed content. We can't do that. Actually, Funkwell was originally designed to be a replacement to Grooveshark, hence why it's called Funk Whale. It's Grooveshark.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Which even our new maintainer didn't know. And I explained it to him and he was like,
And this is why I didn't find anything when I heard Funk Whale and start looking for a fun quail.
No, it's not a fun little bird. No, it's a funky whale. But no, so the sort of feature set was based around that. You would have a library, you could build radios, You could build playlists. And it kind of just expanded over time. You wanted, you know, Agata added functionality for multiple people to have a server, an account on a server, and then multiple people to have multiple libraries. And then the idea of federation comes in and essentially breaks everything. Because now, you know, you're dealing with privacy levels, you're dealing with all sorts of additional things. So it is mostly for people to upload their own personal catalog and stream it from any device. But there is also functionality called channels, which is for publishing Creative Commons licensed or, you know, licensed art libre or other freely licensed content. And basically, people can follow those channels like any other ActivityPub channel. So they can be followed on, you know, Mastodon or Plarima or whatever it is you use. And this year, we are looking to add a lot more discoverability, including the ability to just follow what other users are doing and what they're listening to and what they're liking. This is something where we're having to go back and fundamentally rewrite how some of the ActivityPub stuff is done because it's a little bit complicated.
So it's like Mastodon, Jamendo, and let's say Plex for audio.
Yeah, and Jamendo is actually quite a good one to sort of point out because it's about that sort of discoverability of freely licensed content. It's not just music, though. Like, podcasting is also sort of natively supported. So we actually were the first project on the Fediverse to support podcasting. Castapod then came along and focused solely on it, and they have made a lot of strides in that space. So that we're not exactly competing with Castapod. I wouldn't say we even look at them as being, you know, competitor to us because they're so far ahead on podcasting. But yeah, it's one of the things we do, and we do want to do more as well. But all, one thing at a time. We've got to get 1.3.0 out the door first, and that's been about a year in the making because that's a complete rewrite of things. So yeah,
I might have missed it when. So let's say that I make music in you know, some hellish universe when I try, and I want to publish it using Funkwhale.
Mm-hmm.
Do you host it or do I just run my own instance? And yeah, probably that, right? So I would run my own instance of Funkwhale, point it to my files, and that would federate through the Fediverse.
Yeah, ideally we push people to, we sort of want people to host their own instance because the Fediverse is stronger the more servers we have in it. And yeah, once you upload some servers, some files to a channel, any other user can follow that channel. And if I am on a server and I follow your content, your channel, every other user on my server sees that content and can go and listen to it, follow it, do whatever, because it basically caches all of the information to my server. That's part of the discoverability element of it. Similarly, libraries of content. So prior to having channels, we had these things called libraries. It's a bit messy, but basically that's how you upload your CD collection. And in theory, you can say, you know, I wanted to share mine with you. You can just sort of share a link to a collection, and people can then have that appear on their pod and they just stream it from your sort of service. But then you start to, you know, get into the whole realm of, well, how do we handle copyright issues? How do we handle all these different bits and pieces? And that's why we have things like private libraries and we have public libraries and all sorts of things, because we're dealing in a very different ballpark to a lot of the other Fediverse projects, which, of course, are all just user-generated.
You could use the service as just your own private media server. Like, mm-hmm. I've ripped all of my CDs. I have 60 gigs worth of CDs or something like that. And you just have your own hosted server. And you went, the only thing I'm using this for is to stream down to my mobile device.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, you can, if that's your only goal, you can just turn off Federation entirely.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay.
This is similar. This has got some similarities to Owncast, which is a project that we've talked about a few episodes back in terms of, well, there are few similarities. Yeah, so I'm going to ask you a similar question to what we asked Gabe back then. How many musicians do you find that are also willing and able to install a Fediverse server?
Yeah, not many. so we have a few, and I can name one off the top of my head as a person called Kyle Bronston actually did quite early on install Funkwhale and have a service of their own. But the fact of the matter is, when it comes to, you know, creative types, they're not always technical types, and a lot of the time they don't want to have to spend all the time faffing around building a server to put their music out there. It's not enticing. And so we do run a flagship instance called open.audio, and we do allow people in that. And I myself run a sort of public instance called Tanuki Tunes, where users get about 10 gigabytes to upload content. And we'd like to go further than that. Like, we'd like to make it a one-click thing to run a Funkwell server. Like, that's the ultimate goal for us. But that will take some time.
Would you recommend using a Funkwell instance for podcasters as well? You said that you are not ahead with podcasting, but would you think that for a simple podcast that a hypothetical podcast that publishes about one episode every 2 weeks, has about 4 people working on it every time, all volunteers, nothing special, do you think that you'd be able to facilitate that?
There could be 3 Irish people and 1 American on it. I mean, nothing specific.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. It has all the tools that you need for that. It produces an RSS feed, so you get what you need out of it. The publishing flow in design-wise was originally conceived with a bunch of podcasters. That's how we did it. Agat approached the community and said, look, I want to build the first podcasting solution. What do you need? And what have you got in other services? It's just that there are, the podcasting has sort of moved on, and there are other things that people might want to do with it. And the actual interface to the software, design-wise, just isn't as good as it could be. So we have a designer named Mathieu, and he has been banging his head against the wall for about the last 2 years, drawing wonderful designs to it for us that we've never implemented because we've had other things we needed to do. So we actually have started work on this, but it's one of those things where we need to get 1.3.0 out the door, because that gives us our new what's called the... we use Vue.js as our app framework. And we've just shipped the new major version of that. So then we'll start shipping the new design component library that we've built, which is called Funkwell UI. And then we'll start building the new flows, the new tools. And at that point, I would probably suggest, yes, for simple podcasts, Funkwell is pretty good. And you get all the stuff you need. For more advanced podcasting stuff, for analytics and those kinds of things, Castapod is going to be better. And this is exactly what Castapod says on their website. You know, they've said exactly the same thing. Funkwell's great for the simple stuff, and if you want to do other audio things, we're the place to be. But if you're purely podcasting, you're going to be best served by Castapod.
So I think we should move on to maybe the other project you touched on earlier, the podcasting API. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we were approached by a few of the sort of few developers of podcatchers. So I think originally it was led by the developers of AntennaPod, which is, by the way, a really great podcatcher if anyone's looking for one for Android. We had Casts, which is a KDE podcatcher, a web-based podcatcher called PodFriend, and also the developer of the Gpodder for Nextcloud plugin. And we were invited in because we make a podcatcher, Funkwell, but it's also a server, so we have some server expertise. What they wanted to achieve was basically find something or make something to improve upon Gpodder. So for people who don't know Gpodder, it's a podcatcher for sort of Android and desktop, and it has a service called gpodder.net, which is used to synchronize your playback position and your subscriptions and settings and all these different things about your podcasts, which is great. It's a fantastic idea, and they've been sustaining it for a long time. The problems that we've encountered with it are that it's a centralized service, so basically you just have gpodder.net, and that, I believe, is all that is supported officially. You might be able to run it on your own instance, but I don't think they have instructions for that. And the way that the project is structured has quite a lot of pitfalls. Things like weird behavior if you try and sync a podcast at the same position twice. So you pause a podcast at 3:51, and then you try and do that again at some other point on a different client or something. Well, the combination of episode and position is globally unique. You can't do that. So it just doesn't sync, which is not great. And they've been working on a new version of the API for a long time, but it's nowhere near ready. So basically the idea was, well, why don't we get together and try and come up with a list of problems to solve and just put together a specification? not build a service, not do anything like that, but write a specification that developers could implement as a, you know, as their own server. So if you wanted to build a server in Rust that did all of this stuff, you could do that. If you wanted to build one in Python, if you want to build one in Go, you can do that. All you have to do is implement the specification. So we've basically been having meetings where we discuss what are the problems, what are you trying to achieve, and then try and turn that into a meaningful specification which a developer can build into a client and build into a server. So far, we are pretty close to publishing the first version of the subscriptions endpoint, and that is quite, is made quite difficult because of trying to align to the podcasting 2.0 side of things, specifically GUIDs, so globally unique identifiers for podcasts. And so we've had to write a whole bunch of behavior in around how GUIDs are handled. And it's just a, it's a really fun project because, you know, we're thinking about things that, you know, I don't think ever even crossed our mind at Funkwhale. And I think it's forcing, you know, the client developers to sort of grapple with how they want to handle some of the podcasting 2.0 stuff. So that's great. And it's been really fun to sort of work on it with them. It's just a lot of writing at the moment. And we're sort of looking for people to come in and tell us what they think and, you know, do they think that the approach works and that sort of thing.
Immediately that comes to mind is there are services that their clients are definitely open source, so I don't know if their backends are open source, but there's Podverse, mm-hmm. and Pocket Casts is one that I use, and I know they open source their clients recently, but probably their service is probably proprietary. But yeah, certainly the great thing about open source is all of the code is open and you could like glean lessons off each other or take some of their ideas, or maybe they can take some of your ideas. And I don't mean that in a stealing sense. That's the benefit of open source, is if somebody has an implementation that you like the look of, you can say, oh, well, that kind of saves us work because we don't have to do that then because their implementation is better, or vice versa.
Yeah, and I think part of this comes down to the specification will cover a set of core features. And in order to be considered compliant with the Open Podcast API spec, you have to put these core features in. But it doesn't mean you can't do other things as well. There might be other features you want to add that are specific to your service. And that's fine, as long as your client can then support that on top. So I don't know about Podverse, but in theory, they could implement the Open Podcast API as an additional thing to their service. That would be fine. You know, it's entirely fine. And if they wanted to join in and say, hey, actually, we have some ideas about this, or we've already done X, Y, and Z, or hey, if GPodder developers want to come in and say, we tried tackling this, this is where the shortfalls were, you know, then we can talk about that. But at the moment, we're sort of tackling it from the perspective of where the client developers have found it frustrating.
How does it work? So you are writing up a specification. Do you write like a test implementation in some kind of code as well?
We will, yeah. So the idea is that we will write a specification, and once we consider an endpoint or a set of functionality to be ready in from the specification side, from the standpoint, then basically Georg, who is the Funkwhale sort of project lead, will write a reference server to basically see if what we wrote works from the perspective of code. And, you know, hopefully it will. Hopefully it'll be fine. But we'll release a sort of reference server, maybe host it somewhere, but I don't know if that's the plan as yet. And then eventually we will probably put this sort of code into Funkwhale directly as well, because then we are even more useful for podcasting as a playback thing.
So if I understand it correctly, once your specification is ready and once either you create the reference server and people start using it, and or somebody else comes up with new servers and clients obviously will need to either update or you need to have new clients altogether, you will be able to use... Is it still working along public ActivityPub?
So this is completely separate to ActivityPub. The idea is that it's all based around RSS feeds, because podcasting is RSS feeds, like this is how podcasting works. What we're saying is that basically, let's say you have a client, say it's AntennaPod, and you subscribe to a new feed on your AntennaPod client. And you just want to make it so that when you go to your Cast desktop client, that feed will be present on there. Similar to how it works with, for example, Apple Podcasts. If I subscribe on my iPhone, it turns up on my Mac eventually. it takes its time. So what this does is very simply, it has a REST API where the client can basically send this RSS feed, and it says, I found this globally unique identifier in the RSS feed, if it finds one. And it sends that information to the server, and the server goes, great, I've got that information. Then when you log in with another server, it says to the server, hey, tell me everything that's changed since I last checked in with you. And the server says, well, since you last checked in, this feed was added. So you should probably download that feed and get those podcast episodes in here.
And the great thing about that is that it can work across clients.
Exactly.
So you can have one, you don't have to be stuck with a single company's podcast client for desktop, auto, and mobile phone, but mm-hmm. you can have AntennaPod on one, for example.
Yeah. And also, if, for example, you were using someone else's server to synchronize everything, and then you decided, you know what, I want to run my own, and you ran your own server, all you would then have to do is log into that server with your client, and it would send all of the information it has, which should be up to date with the server that you just came from, and basically you've migrated everything you have to the new server. Because the client ultimately holds, you know, the server is a reference point of truth for all of the clients. The clients hold the data as is true at that time. So they can be used to pick up and move data if you need to.
I just had a great use case for this. I'm sure it exists, but imagine that you are outside on your phone listening to your podcast. You walk home. Something somewhere outside of the system registers that you are home. It will switch off your headphones and turn off for every room that you walk through. It will turn the podcast on exactly at time of entry into the speakers in the room. So you basically just seamlessly waltz through life, always listening to what you want to listen to, no matter where you are.
I mean, that's sci-fi, and I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah.
So Sonos integration is coming soon. But I imagine, and you hinted at it earlier, is that your position in the episode will be synchronized up, and chapters and everything like that will be.
Yes.
You said this is a simple REST API, yeah?
Yes.
Actually, what Connor said, I know you were joking when you said Sonos integration, but that means that unless they scrapped that whole thing before, you can actually do things like Alexa Skill or whatever other, whatever other cylindrical devices people might have at home, because it will just, it will be simple application. Everything understands REST and HTTP.
Mm-hmm. Or as Alan Pope calls them, lady cylinders.
The other one I've heard is lady tubes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Lady tubes. Yeah, the whole point was try to create, because GPodder is a great service. Like, you know, this is not us saying GPodder sucks, we want to replace it, blah, blah, blah. GPodder just has a lot of technical debt to overcome, and it's going to take them a long time to get there. And, you know, we think that starting fresh with a very simple REST API is probably the best way forward. And that's exactly what we've tried to do. We've tried to split everything into its component parts and do this all from the perspective of what do we expect at FunkWhale as server developers versus what do AntennaPod expect as client developers and Cast expect as client developers, and what does like Nextcloud expect from the perspective of a plugin. All of these things we're trying to consider and basically build something that does exactly that. It just replicates that functionality of a service that people are used to, like, you know, Spotify, like Apple Podcasts, when it comes to that seamless integration between devices, eventually with Apple, because it takes time. It puts all of these things together, but it takes away that element of proprietariness, and it takes away that element of being locked to a server. You are not locked to a server. You're not locked to a client. As long as you've got a client that has the most up-to-date information, you can migrate to another server by just putting in the details, and it sends all of the information it has as a series of calls. These are my subscriptions, these are my episode positions, these are my whatever it may be.
That is very compelling. I must say that is very compelling. One thing that has tied me to Pocket Casts in the past is simply their seamless synchronization between different devices, and also they have a web UI. Full disclosure, I'm grandfathered into their lifetime subscription. I think it's a yearly subscription to avail of this service now, which is not exactly that expensive either. But the very fact of, like, I'm getting all of this for free, it is very compelling for me as well. So it's just the ease of use. And if something is as easy to use and is as easily integrated as I find Pocket Casts, then yeah. And also the open nature of it, the fact that if I don't like a server, I can just get up and take my podcast subscriptions with me, all with their desynchronized, he's halfway through this episode, he has 10 minutes left in that episode, all of that information is also synchronized across there. Yeah, that's very compelling.
Yeah, and that's all down to the... That's all down to the client developers, because the client developers, you know, obviously they'll cache all that information. They have that information on the device. So they're just going to, if you say log out of this server, log into this server, it's basically just going to send a status dump and say, this is where it all is. Not that we have actually written that part of the spec yet, but that is the expected behavior.
It's on the roadmap.
It's on the roadmap. Yeah. Check back with us in a little while.
Do you have like a, at this date we would like to be at X, and at this date is going to be finished and published?
So tell me, is it going to be Q2 or Q3? Or
Look, you're talking to the person who's sitting on a year-old release of Funkwell, okay? No, there is no timeline. We're all, you know, we all are involved in different projects. So, you know, we dedicate what time we have. We have a monthly meeting about this to kind of discuss what needs to be done, what's next. Like I say, we started work on this and we met up about this at FOSDEM, which is when it really kicked off. So that was in February. And basically, we have the subscriptions endpoint, which is synchronizing subscriptions, deleting subscriptions, you know, posting new subscriptions, modifying subscriptions. Those things are spec'd. There's a few corrections we need to write. And that's, you know, that just that functionality has taken as well. The most important thing for us to do is establish what core functionality is. Like, what do we consider to be the absolute core functionality that we can't do without? So that's things like episode syncs, you know, it's things like playback position syncs. It's things like settings synchronization. Might, you know, so if you say, I want this podcast specifically to be played at two times speed on every podcast client that supports that kind of thing. That's stuff that GPodder has and that we would like to kind of replicate. But the idea is that the spec is kind of living. So we can say, this is a core endpoint, this is core functionality, and as of this version, you need to have this in order to be spec compliant. But then other things we might say are optional. We might still spec them because we want to give an idea of how it might work, but we won't say that they're core functions, you know? We need to decide what the core functionality looks like, and then that will give us an idea of like what the lift is like, what the effort is like to put that all down into words. At the moment, it's just me writing, which it puts a limit on it because, you know, I'm also doing all the writing at Funkwell and speccing there. And then I have a day job, apparently, which is rude. And they expect me to write and build stuff. And, you know, frankly, how dare they?
I mean, you have to put food on your table somehow, and you have to go clubbing in Berlin somehow.
Yeah, it's a hard lifestyle here, I tell you. You know.
So I'm curious. There seems to be a through line between those projects that you're involved in. So you have podcasting, which is audio based, and Funkwell, which is broadly music based. Is that kind of an interest of yours? Are you a music head? Are you an audio head?
Oh, well, as we can tell from how I failed to set everything up here, audio technology is clearly not my strength. But I am a musician. I was raised playing musical instruments. So I played violin since I was about 5 or 6. My mum's in the next room. She'll be able to tell me. She'll probably come in and go, no, you haven't. I played piano. I played like piano accordion was one of my big instruments. Guitar, bass. I was in bands as a kid. I've always loved music, and from both of my parents, I have sort of a big CD collection, a big collection of music that I just love to listen to. So it's definitely, you know, a through line of passion for me. Podcasts, much later though, like I did not catch the podcast train when it first came about sort of in the early 2000s. It was much later that I actually started to get into podcasts and start to really appreciate them as an art form and as a method of getting information and stuff like that. But now I just listen to them all the time. So for me, it's like, you know, that's something I consider to be a core thing that we need to get right, especially in the Fediverse, because as people are moving to the Fediverse as kind of their distributed platform for doing everything, which it does seem to be a lot of people are doing, we need to get that bit right. And so, you know, we'll continue to produce our podcast related tech because we, you know, like I say, we respect what Castapod is doing and they are a long way ahead of us in terms of their functionality. But we don't necessarily want something that supports podcasting 2.0 to be the only option. We don't particularly like podcasting 2.0. Not all of it. Some bits of it are great. But specifically the funding mechanisms and things like that are just kind of anathema to us.
So less with the Satoshis is what you're saying.
Yeah. What we would prefer to... we've been looking into stuff like... We have our own project, which is called Retribute, which is a Funkwell project that basically lets you find people you interact with in the Fediverse and see what their donation links are. So, you know, if I've been interacting with you a lot, Connor, for example, it will say, well, hey, you interacted with Connor like 20 times this month. Why not give them some money? They've got a Patreon in their bio. So I just plug my Mastodon handle in and it says, here's all the people you've interacted with, weighted by how many they've done. So we have that. And then there's also a new payments API that they're trying to put in as a W3C standard. And that's more what we would like to sort of focus on when it comes to monetizing content than crypto, which we're just not comfortable with.
Did you know, apologies if you said this already, but you say you are working on specs in regards to the GUID in that podcasting 2.0 brought in. Is it going to work without it?
Yes.
Because that's quite a... Okay, good.
That is one of the things we sort of came across. So the way that the spec sort of puts it is that the client can read the RSS feed and look for a GUID. And if it's a podcast 2.0 RSS feed, or if it has been, you know, put into a service that supports podcasting 2.0, the feed will have a GUID. So the client can send that to the server and say, this is the GUID, this is the feed, that's it. But if you get a feed that doesn't have a GUID, all that will happen is you'll send the feed alone, no GUID, to the server. The server then generates a GUID and sends it back and says, when you query the API, here's the GUID you need to query. So it always has a GUID. And then if at a later date, for example, they add a GUID into the feed, the client can then say, hey, update this and put this new GUID in. And the server says, right, this entry now has a new GUID. And it returns it and says to any client that asks, so another client comes in later and says, has something changed? It goes, yes, something has changed. That now has a new GUID and you need to use that instead.
Okay, that sounds really good. That's, makes complete sense.
Yeah. Again, respect to Castapod here, we talked with them at FOSDEM and they were talking about how they've been very careful about making podcasting 2.0 and podcasting 1.0 compatible things and making sure that they don't overlap or overwrite each other, basically. And that's exactly what we're trying to do as well. Like, absolutely, podcasting 1.0 is still going to be around for a while. So we need to support it. It might never go away. Some people just may not want to use it. That's fine.
So, Ciarán, just to change tack for a little bit, I was just scanning through our interactions in our Telegram chat and on Mastodon, and I see we both have very similar opinions on Star Trek Picard. So that was a nice little touchstone. But first season, I got as far as episode 4. I tried to watch it twice. Both times, I think first time I got to episode 2. Second time I got to episode 4, and I just couldn't hear the show because I was just groaning so loud the entire time. Like, no, that's not how that would be. No, come on.
It's a masterclass in character assassination. It really is.
I think I lasted about half of a season through, and I think that in the first episode, it seems to be very forced. I was like, ha ha, I called my dog number one. I was like,
There's a hearty amount of cringe, but then there's also just a fundamental misunderstanding of the character and the world.
And exactly.
That stuff is sad to me because, you know, the thing is, I don't mind. They make Star Trek and they make a new series of Star Trek and it's, you know, goofy, like this like Lower Decks thing is, that's kind of okay to me. I just won't watch it. That's fine. But like, it's totally separate. That's absolutely fine by me.
I liked Discovery.
Sure. And Discovery is a totally separate thing. I mean, it does go into original series, but I'll be honest and say I don't really like original series that much. You know, I'm very much that sort of period from TNG to halfway through Voyager and a little bit of Enterprise. That was kind of it for me. DS9 and TNG were my thing.
Yeah.
But like, that where I have problems is that Picard is a well-established character. He's got a history. He was written fully. And they've gone in and just completely misunderstood the character. And I don't know, that's not necessarily just, what's his name, Kurtzman? Or is it Ortsy? One of those two who leads it all. Mm. It's not just him. It's also Patrick Stewart wanting to play the hero and do that side of things. It's just not right.
That was a key difference. Patrick Stewart was actually involved in the writing for the show, whereas he wasn't in previous Star Trek. And I was stick to playing the character. Stick to like letting someone else write the lines.
He's never understood the character, to be honest. I don't think he's ever really understood the show. And that's fine.
As I understand, though, people have been telling me, no, watch season 3, because it's basically just like the next generation, new clothes. It's like, and my friend said this to me, everyone is back. And he's like, no, everyone is back.
Yeah.
Every character you remember makes an appearance.
I watch a lot of Red Letter Media and, you know.
I love that.
I was going to say, I was very pleased that like my opinions seemed to align when I first watched it. I then watched the Red Letter Media sort of trying to watch it. And watching Mike and Rich kind of collapse, I was just like, oh, thank God, it's not just me. but then like, they've been quite, you know, they've been putting on some praise on season 3. But for me, it doesn't matter. They kind of burned that bridge. It doesn't matter if season 3 is great. I'm not going to watch it because I don't want to put any money in their pocket and I don't want them to make any more.
I think I will skip straight to season 3 and watch like a recap video of the first two seasons. Just because for nostalgia purposes, because apparently season 3 is chock full of nostalgia.
Yeah, I've heard it's like a movie, like the first 4 episodes or so, that what they were saying on Red Letter Media was it's kind of like a TNG movie, but a good one. And I'm just like, I didn't realize that could be a thing. you know, so I can dig it. Like I say, it's just for me personally, I'm done. Star Trek to me, it was in the like late 80s to the early 2000s, and I don't really engage with it beyond that. I was just angry at Picard because I like that character and I hate what they did to him.
Yeah, I've kind of recently moved on to The Expanse. That's kind of my favorite sci-fi fandom in the last few years.
Mm. For me, I never really had that thing where I was watching The Next Generation as it was coming out. So for me, I was like, canon, whatever. It's not that important to me because I was never emotionally invested in the first place. So that's and you said that's the reason why I'm enjoying watching Discovery. I'm like, it's his own thing, and I'm actually really enjoying it and everything. And it's like J.J. Abrams, Space Drake, lasers and battles and everything. It's like, it's entertaining. Yeah, still.
Yeah. I watched TNG through reruns on Sky One.
Yeah.
For me, the one that came out, the episode, the sci-fi show that I watched religiously growing up was Stargate SG-1.
I love how self-referential it got towards the end. It was actually quite cool.
I was too young to watch Star Trek growing up because I was born in like 1994. So by the time I was watching Star Trek, it was already the sort of mid-2000s. And so, but like, it was always Voyager on rerun. And my dad and I would watch Voyager. And, my, you know, I then saw a few episodes of TNG, but I really didn't get into Star Trek until, like, university. And I binge-watched a lot of it. Didn't really like original series. It's a bit too corny. I don't know what it is about. The treatment of women in that show is very weird. That carries... I mean, it's, you know, obviously a lot of it is just straight-up offensive. But then even the bits where they're trying to be progressive, it just comes off as really weird, like they've never interacted with a human woman before. And then you get season one of Next Generation, and it's exactly the same thing. And I was like, oh no, they didn't learn their lesson at all. But then, you know, season one finishes, and you're just like, oh, okay, they got a new writing staff, and it became fine. But for me, it was always like, I don't like the J.J. Abrams, like, Starship Lays as much. I mean, I liked the first Star Trek, and I quite liked the third one. The second one, no.
No.
But for me, I just like the almost submarine nature of like TNG, where it's like Cold War era submarines meeting, and basically you could start a nuclear war at any point if you're not careful with how you resolve this issue diplomatically. And it takes them 45 minutes to have that conversation, and they're constantly checking with each other, am I doing this right, is this right? I love that stuff. Like that to me is the pinnacle of Star Trek.
That's what I always said.
To me, The Next Generation was like, I don't really care much about sci-fi, because I don't know, but I really enjoyed the kind of confluence of, yay, we are getting from this away from this nonsense that we lived in for 40 years. And at the same time, we are getting all this American culture, and it's showing us that the world is going to be great. And we are gonna get to a place where being human really means something cool. And as I was growing up, that was a really cool message. And I don't think Amazon Studios or whoever does it now can, I don't think they can reproduce this, you know, I forget about characters and lasers and whatever. I don't think they can bring back this mood that, you know, the sentiment that I still get from watching TNG and Deep Space Nine.
No.
Not from Voyager, though. I didn't finish Voyager ever, and I don't know why.
I watched the entire thing. I loved it.
And don't forget the Irish reunification in 2024.
Oh, yeah, that it was interesting. That was actually cut out from the episode for the longest time, and the episode was banned in the UK for a time because of that.
Hey, look, the UK is pushing us all towards it. You can thank us. We've been doing that.
They said something like Brexit did more for Irish reunification in than Sinn Féin have done in 30 years.
Absolutely, and Scottish independence, and even Welsh independence. You know what? Cornwall can go independent too. Why not? It's just form a Gaelic union. Okay. Ireland,
the Isle of Man is in there too.
Sure. Ireland, Wales, Scotland, Isle of Man, Cornwall. You guys all have great fun. Just leave England as this sad little nation of, you know, hey, look, we've got a king. We'll be fine, okay? He just got crowned. It's great. but no, I think with like TNG and all that stuff, you got to remember like 1989, that was like the fall of the Berlin Wall. There was this hope. There was so much hope in the world. You know, people were like, oh my gosh, all of this stuff that was going on is coming to an end. We can be friends with our enemies. We can work together to a better world. That we're working like the new series, Discovery, Picard, all of that lot. They're working in a fundamentally different world where especially after 2016, all of the hope started to just like drain. It was, I mean, obviously post 9/11 is where it really started, but 2016 was like a moment where somebody just pulled the plug. And the hope just went circling down. So
we entered the dark timeline.
We did. And I think that's what the writers have to contend with. But I live that. I don't want to watch it on TV. I don't want to watch my favorite happy time captain going through that, because I'm going through that.
Exactly.
They need to give us, in my opinion, this is one of the core competencies of art. They can give us hope in shitty times, right? Especially, you know, I there are others, but like, they could create first something new. For fuck's sake, Hollywood, everybody, just create new things. Stop rehashing what you've done before. It's not suitable. It's not funny, and it's not watchable anymore. And like, figure out what people need and just produce it. You know, especially these days, they have so much money. They could just the scene in TNG where they literally had to all move to the right and then to the left to pretend that the Enterprise is shaking or whatnot it was. I don't remember. That can now be done credibly and for no money. You know, they have so much stuff they can work with now. So they just should take it up and produce something that people would actually love. You know, and it doesn't have to be happy, clappy, you know. Mm-hmm. Firefly was amazing. Again, product of its times. And that it still can happen. It's just somebody needs to actually do it.
Yeah.
I remember watching Firefly for the first time, and again, I missed it when it first came out. And I was watching it, and I was like, this is Cowboy Bebop. We've had this. Yeah. It's the same thing. I mean, it's a different coat of paint. It's a different tone, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's you know, whatever. But I was just there like, okay, it's space cowboys. Mm. And it's like in a world where everyone speaks Chinese and English and all this. I've seen this before. You know, don't get me wrong. I love them both.
I've never actually seen any of Star Trek except for the recent movies.
Oh, you're in for a treat then. I highly recommend going back and watching Next Generation. And I think, to me, DS9 is the best. Mm-hmm. But TNG is the most hopeful and positive. Just, you've got to get through season 1 and 2. Because they've got some bright spots, but... Oh, boy, do they have some black holes.
My girlfriend and I will give it a watch.
And DS9 is a little bit boring at the start. It has some good episodes, but honestly, I found like I almost got to season 5 before I was like, when is this show going to get going? Like,
I never got into it. It was a whole bunch of Ferengis. I just didn't understand.
Yeah, but Sisko, he was great. Come like, on, yeah. Isn't he just almost? I know this is a blasphemy, but isn't he really a much better captain? Not much, but just a little bit. Isn't he really tiny wee bit? Sometimes maybe better than Picard as a character.
He's just very different. Like Picard is very rigid by the rules and whatever, and Sisko starts out DS9 hating Starfleet because of what happened to his wife, you know, and that's a really interesting perspective to start from. Like, we have to follow a commander who becomes a captain who hates this system but is being put into this situation with his enemies all around him. You've got the Cardassians who are basically handing over Terra Nor to him, and it's like you've got this faction of aliens who are, you know, technically own this place, but, you know, they need help with the stewardship. It's got a lot of tensions, which TNG never had. And that's interesting. And you might like it, you might not. Some people just prefer TNG, and that's absolutely great.
Yeah.
I preferred Voyager.
I like them both.
Yeah. I have a soft spot for Voyager, but Neelix does get a bit much sometimes.
And we're going to gloss over the episode where they become future lizards and mate.
Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah.
We're going to gloss over the episode where Janeway and Chakotay get abandoned on a planet because they get, like, infected by something, and they very almost do the sort of vertical shuffle together.
Or when
Janeway falls in love with an Irish hologram. One?
It happens.
Okay. Fair Haven.
It's a very sexy accent.
They're in a little Irish village in the holodeck, and it's exactly what you think it is. It's like dee 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 dee, you know, Darby O'Gill and the little people. Like,
yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean the episode of TNG where they basically is it TNG? Yes, TNG where they have the, let's face it, Irish settlers.
Yeah,
that they just bring up, and it's the most like stereotypical racist nonsense.
Still dress like they're in the 1800s and everything. Yeah,
I haven't shown my girlfriend that because she's from Kerry, and I think she would probably be like, "What? What?"
Yeah. To his credit, I forget his name. To the actor, Colm Meaney.
When he became
Chief O'Brien, he was reading the character and says, "An American of like Boston Irish descent," and he says he went into it and says, "Will I do an attempt at a Boston Irish accent?" And they went, "No, just straight, just do your own accent," and it worked because then it was genuine. There was no pretense about it.
Okay, I think that about wraps things up. So as what we usually do when we have a guest on, Ciarán, is we allow them to give out any links or socials or anything that they'd like to put out there.
So you can follow Funkwhale on Mastodon or on the Fediverse through a platform of your choosing. So we are funkwhale@fostodon.org. Our website is funkwhale.audio. You can reach me also on the Fediverse. That's cda@fostodon.org. And if you're interested in the Open Podcast API, the website is openpodcastapi.org. So that's all one word, Open Podcast API. There's nothing there yet, but when we publish the first set of specs, it should appear and you should be amazed.
Sounds great.
Does Open Podcasting API have a GitHub that you would want people to contribute to? Or
yeah, absolutely. It's so it's github.com/openpodcastapi, all one word. And then the repository is api-specs. So if you want to go in and have a look, there is a pull request open for the subscriptions endpoint, and that's where we're doing work on that.
Amazing. Okay. So thanks so much for coming on. It was actually a very nice discussion, pretty interesting. So I'd encourage everyone to check out those two projects.
I do want to mention before we finish wrapping things up that I'm going to be at Southeast Linux Fest in about a month. So if anyone wants to meet up, write the show, write me, whatever, links will be in the show notes.
So yeah, get in touch and get a picture with your very own Linux lad at Southeast Linux Fest. You can get a selfie. Ha 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 ha.
That's so bad.
I could not resist. So if you want to support the show, we have a store. You can go to linuxlads.com/store to buy a mug or a t-shirt, something like that. We have a Steam community where you can find out when we're gaming and that kind of thing. So go to steamcommunity.com/groups/linuxlads. You can get on our Telegram group, which is linuxlads.com/telegram. You can go to get us on Matrix as well, linuxlads.com/matrix. That's actually bridged to the Telegram as well. We are on Twitter. So linuxlads.com/Twitter. I believe it's just @linuxlads. And then linuxlads.com/mastodon will get you to the Mastodon page as well. You can also email us on show@linuxlads.com. And despite rumors to the contrary, we do exist in real life. You can meet us in for reals lands at dublinlinux.org. You can go to one of our meetups if you live in the Dublin area. So we have those pretty frequently. Okay. So yeah, thanks very much for coming along, Ciarán, and thanks everyone for joining us. We'll be back in about 2 weeks. So see you later. Bye.
Adios.
Bye.
Bye.
Linux, 50% lads.